And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
All right, what's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of the Buffalo Beat. My name is Joe Biscaglia. Thanks, everyone, for hanging out with me for this post-game edition and what will wind up being the final post-game edition of the podcast of the 2023 season as the Bills find their season to be over in the divisional round for a third straight season, their second straight season losing a divisional round playoff game at home at Highmark Stadium, and their third loss in the postseason to the Chiefs over the last 4 years. The Bills lose this one 27-24 in what was an absolutely awesome game where a lot of offensive firepower just coming in different ways. Like, the Bills were more of a methodical long drive approach in this game, whereas the Chiefs were big plays, lots of yards, move the ball down the field quickly sort of thing. But be it as it may, these two teams were finding success, getting points on almost every single drive, and it led to what was really an enthralling game for a lot of the time. And there were so very few defensive stops throughout the game. But the big point is that the Bills lose to the Chiefs yet again, the team that they have been desperately trying to get past in the playoffs, whether it be by themselves or having someone else do it for them and then moving on to the next round. The Bills have been unable to advance to a round past the Chiefs since Sean McDermott has arrived in Buffalo. And, you know, it's tough. They have Patrick Mahomes, and when he plays the way that he did against the Bills on Sunday, then it's a difficult thing to do. But this is also a Bills team that has found regular season success against this very Chiefs team, on the road, mind you. But for one reason or another, wilt once they get to the playoffs against this Chiefs team and now face a bevy of offseason questions, which we will get into later in the show. I know this is a loss that likely stings to a lot of you, and you know, this year certainly to many felt like it was potentially different. The Chiefs had never come to Buffalo before in the playoffs. Mahomes had never played a Bills team at Highmark Stadium when there were fans in the stands. It was the first road playoff game he had ever played. Their offense, for much of the regular season, was not performing up to their typical standards. And the Bills, after turning their season around following the overtime loss in Philadelphia in week 12, go to their week 13 bye, come back refreshed, rip off 6 wins in a row, including the wild card win over the Steelers. And it seemed like they were getting to the point where it could be the year for them. But yet again, they fell short. And now, figuring out exactly where to go from here might be more complex than Brandon Bean has had to deal with since he arrived in Buffalo. But like I said, we will get there later in the show. But first, let's go over some of the key pieces to the matchup and where it all kind of went wrong, how the Chiefs were so successful, and really how it was impacted by availabilities versus scheme and everything, and certain personnel decisions. It all plays into it. And for the Bills, we knew full well that their offense would be a piece that would probably getting to expect a 30-point game from the Bills against this Chiefs defense was probably going to be hard to come by. Outside of an overtime situation, which it almost was if it wasn't for the Tyler Bass missed field goal with under 2 minutes to go. But the Chiefs' offense is the piece of the puzzle here that, you know, heading into the playoffs, there were a lot of questions about them. And just from watching their film against the Dolphins, and I know what you can say about that because the Dolphins were banged up. They had suffered a lot of injuries. And so that is at least something that you need to consider when watching that film. But what I saw from that game was the closest I had seen of the Chiefs getting back to their form on offense, despite, you know, having to settle for field goals in certain spots. They were running open on concepts. They were getting guys wide open against zone. And, you know, Kelce, even though he had a couple of drops, was getting open. Rice was a huge factor in that game. And, you know, getting their running game going with Isaiah Pacheco and all of these different factors led into it where it's like, okay, this is not the same Chiefs team from the regular season. But they have been a bit uneven this year. So trying to figure out whether or not you could bank on that in this matchup against the Bills was another thing entirely. So at least there was a certain degree of optimism from the Bills and their fan base that they would be able to keep this Chiefs offense that has struggled at times this season to kind of dip back into those tendencies. But that did not happen on Sunday. The Chiefs offense is very much awake. And they had a very clear game plan as to how to pry open the Bills' defense. And that was to attack the intermediate middle of the field. They knew full well that the Bills were down linebackers. But the decision by the Bills to go with A.J. Klein at middle linebacker, who was not on the team 2 weeks ago, wasn't even on the active roster, but to entrust him with the every snap role at middle linebacker against a Patrick Mahomes-led team is one that I could see them regretting for some time. Klein was a liability in coverage, just as I thought it could be. And that was the main reason heading into the game, you know, when we did our live room episode, why I felt like that going into the game with Tyrell Dodson at middle linebacker, if you don't have Bernard, you don't have Baylen Spector, going into the game with Tyrell Dodson at middle linebacker, and then having Dorian Williams, the super explosive rookie linebacker, at least beginning the game with him, that at least gives you a chance in coverage in the middle of the field. But when you are lining up Klein next to Dodson, who are two guys that struggle in coverage, and we have seen it. We saw it in training camp. There was a reason why Klein went from potentially in the conversation to be the starting middle linebacker and then cut from the team entirely back in August. And for them to run it back was a very, very interesting decision by them. And the Chiefs, they exploited it. Travis Kelce over the middle of the field, just easily open several times throughout the game. Rashee Rice, Noah Gray getting in there. They were getting chunk plays against this Bills defense that had been pretty good recently of limiting those a bit. And after they had established prying open the middle of this Bills defense and getting their guard up from that respect, that's when the run game really got going for the Chiefs. Isaiah Pacheco was an absolute chore to deal with. The Chiefs have a very good physical offensive line, and especially running between the tackles at the interior and working against the defensive tackles, working at getting those running backs to the second level when, you know, they're probably half-minded about not allowing a big play in coverage. It led to some big moments. Heck, even Clyde Edwards-Helaire busted a 28-yard run. He had one of his best games of his career, if not the best game of his career, the last time the Chiefs were in Buffalo in 2020. His career has kind of tailed off from that point, but allowing 128 yards on 17 carries is just another example of how this Bills defense got absolutely pried open by what Mahomes and company were able to do. Think about how quickly they moved the ball down the field. They only held the ball for a little under 23 minutes in the game. They only ran 47 plays, but they averaged 7.7 yards per play, which was 3 more yards per play than the Bills. Patrick Mahomes, for all of this talk about having not having the big time weapon along with Travis Kelce, and for Travis Kelce having a down year for his by his standards, which, by the way, he was still second in receiving yards at the tight end position this season. For all of those things, Mahomes against the Bills averaged 9.4 yards per attempt. The Bills have done a great job at mitigating a lot of their injuries from impacting them as much as they could. And they deserve credit for that because it has gotten them to this point in the divisional round where they were hosting the Chiefs in the divisional round. But the one thing I will not understand is the decision to use AJ Klein. And I get their logic too. I could hear them explain it because AJ Klein knows the scheme. They trust him in the scheme. Everything along those lines. They know it's not as much of a high variance play. But to willingly put this inferior athlete who is at the end of his career on the field every single snap that he wasn't injured, which was only one. And to think that the scheme would be able to dictate the rest against Patrick Mahomes, to me, that was just expecting a little too much. And then to not pivot from that when it clearly was not working for them was an even bigger step, I guess. So that to me is where a lot of the game on defense was lost for them. And the Chiefs, the Bills were very fortunate that they didn't suffer a 10-plus point defeat, because if not for Mecole Hardman fumbling the ball away at the 2-yard line, this is a 34-24 game with not that much time left on the clock, and the Bills' hopes would have certainly been dead. They got a get-out-of-jail-free card from Mecole Hardman, which I'm sure the Chiefs will not have that in their playbook in the AFC Championship game or in the Super Bowl if they are to make it there.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
But they let Mahomes, who, again, first road game, everything along those lines, first time playing in front of fans at Highmark Stadium, they let him walk in here and have pretty damn close to a perfect game. There was one drive at the end of the half where they took a penalty and then they knelt it because there was no time on the clock, so I don't really count that. There was a drive in the fourth quarter, I believe, where they forced a punt, which was the only one of the game. So that was, you know, a thumbs up to the Bills defense for that one. And then they were fortunate that Jordan Poyer, last ditch, punched the ball out from Mecole Hardman, but very easily could have been a touchdown to put them up 34-24. So they were 2 yards shy of another touchdown. So Mahomes, for all this talk heading into the game, very nearly pitched a perfect game against the Bills. The yards per attempt, insane. 9.4 yards per attempt. So while it was fair to expect the Chiefs to have a bit more offensive success, to not make personnel changes, I think, was a big a big detracting piece of the puzzle for me. It was going to be a tough game for them to try and limit Isaiah Pacheco. He's a very physical runner. This is not a team that has functioned well versus physicality. And we saw that last week against the Steelers. And the Chiefs are physical with more talent on the offensive and defensive line. So, and specifically in this case, on the offensive line. Very good interior offensive line. But it's just, I don't know, it has to be, and I don't want to belabor the point too much, but it is, has to be a little maddening for them to continue to try the same things with the same personnel. I'm not saying they should have flipped everything on its head, but, you know, going to a Dorian Williams and Tyrell Dodson duo might have done them some good. So that is where the game was undone from a defensive perspective. On offense, you know, it's hard to really criticize Josh Allen a ton because he was once again everything for the Bills. You know, getting, accounting for 258 of their total yards. Their ground game got going a little bit, so that was a nice feature here and there. And, you know, you have to give them credit for establishing these long drives and continuing to churn out first downs and everything along those lines. They held on the ball a lot. They did not turn the ball over, even though they came damn close a few times with some fumbles, especially on the first drive of the game. They were flirting with disaster a little bit, but they got a hold of it. And they continued to move the ball down the field. But there are a few things that stood out besides Josh Allen playing as well as he did in this game. The average yards per attempt was pretty low and a lot lower than what Patrick Mahomes just did. So Mahomes averaged 9.4 yards per attempt. Josh Allen, almost 5 yards fewer per attempt at 4.8 yards per attempt. They just weren't pushing the ball down the field. And when they did, they weren't connecting, like the deep one to Trent Sherfield, the deep pass to Stephon Diggs on first down on the drive that ultimately ended up in Tyler Bass's missed field goal to tie the game. That ball to Diggs should have been caught. Hit him in the arms. And there's just been something that's been a bit off between those two. They haven't been able to connect on that deep ball. You know, for a while you thought, okay, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. That was the best opportunity they have had to connect on a deep pass since this run has started for them. And Diggs missed the opportunity. It is not at all a good thing that for a good chunk of this game, Latavius Murray was near the top of their receiving category for yards at 27 yards. This is a guy that only played 14 snaps. He had more receiving yards than Stephon Diggs. As many catches as Stephon Diggs. Four fewer targets as Stephon Diggs. It makes you wonder because it's not as though Stephon Diggs is not getting open. He is. You see it on film. Trying to figure out why he's not more of a piece of the puzzle is challenging because he is getting open. You can see it. Sometimes it's a drop. Sometimes It's not passing to him. Sometimes it's looking to the other side of the field. But it's just not happening between those two. He has not had a 100-yard game in over 3 months. He has only had 75 or more yards twice in that three-month span. He is too good of a player, even still. And I know he's 30 years old. The ability is not gone. He is still very clearly winning on his routes. But there is a disconnect there. And it does make you wonder exactly what the heck this offseason is going to bring. Like I said, we'll get there. We're close. But before we get to the offseason and maybe the big picture piece of this whole thing, one of my, outside of the AJ Klein thing, one of the things that I thought didn't make a ton of sense was the fake punt call. And it's not that they went for it, because I got the logic behind Sean McDermott going, you know, didn't feel like we would have been able to get a stop that they needed. He felt the flow of the game. He felt that the Chiefs were moving the ball at will. This offensive demise of the Chiefs in the 2023 season was gone. This is a Chiefs team that was moving the ball how they wanted to, when they wanted to. So I don't hate the call to go for it on 4th and 5 at all. But to do it on a fake punt, to run it to a safety that has never carried the ball in his NFL career, and more importantly, to take the ball out of your, at times, superhuman quarterback who has made a career out of absolutely undoing the collective team spirit or defensive spirit of opposing teams with how he's able to pick up 3rd and 4th downs where you don't think he should be able to. To take him out of the equation entirely in favor of running a fake punt is just something to me that is one of those, I don't know how you do it in that spot. Regular season, sure. AFC divisional playoffs, in a tight game with the Kansas City Chiefs, where, you know, team who gets the next score at that point, even though there wound up not being a next score, the team who gets the next score very likely could win the game. To run a fake punt in that spot very nearly cost them the game. They are extremely fortunate that Mecole Hardman fumbled the ball at the 2 through the end zone to give the Bills possession back. That gave them a shot to force overtime or win the game, to which they squandered. That's just the fake punt, along with sticking with AJ Klein for the entire game, to me are just two things I have a tough time from a logical perspective. And there are plenty more things that, you know, I'm going to figure out once I get my hands on the film in a couple of days here. But those are two things that glaringly stood out to me as to why in that moment? Why throughout the game are you sticking with a player that just very clearly is struggling? So much to get to, of course, as the week kind of goes on. But I promised big picture. I promised what this all means. I promised where this whole thing is headed. And what's interesting to me about this year entirely is you could feel it around the building that it was lighter, that even the players who had been there a long time kind of felt like this year was a different one to them. Talking to Dawson Knox after the game, he even just threw in a comment, you know, this year felt different. So I asked him, why? It's like, well, the momentum coming out of the bye week and getting the home game the way that they did, and, you know, just having fun, having confidence, and, you know, feeling like they could rip these wins off and accomplish all the goals that they set out since Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean arrived in 2017. Like they, and I don't think Dawson Knox was alone, they collectively likely believed that this year just felt unlike the other ones in previous Bills postseasons. Last year was different because, you know, I think we can all point to that and think that they were pretty physically, mentally exhausted. And that led to probably their worst postseason performance collectively in those two games. They nearly, you know, they let Miami stay way too close in that wild card round. And then the Cincinnati game, obviously, the Bengals dominated that game from start to finish. But even in the previous years, losing to the Chiefs in 2021, they had to feel close, but still they were missing that piece of, man, if only the Chiefs could play in Buffalo. Let's see what that would bring. But to get the Chiefs at home, to have the number two seed, to go from the 11th place team in the AFC when they were 6-6 to the number two seed and having things break the way they did the entire year or the rest of the year, for Miami to blow a game late against the Titans, to allow the Bills a chance to play for the AFC East division and the number two seed in the postseason. It was breaking the right way for the Bills. So they felt like it could be different this year. But as we found out, some similar problems persist in the playoffs. And that functioning problem right now is being able to get past the Chiefs. At this point, we have seen multiple iterations of the Bills. They have gone with the status quo sometimes. They have reinvented themselves at some positions other years to try and finally push themselves forward. But this loss in itself stings a little different, I think, for guys that have been there throughout this entire thing and a lot of the people that watch this team every single week. You can go through their first four playoff exits and explain in a way and come out feeling optimistic for the upcoming year. 2019, it was their first foray into the playoffs. They go to Houston, tight game, needed a huge play down the stretch of that game for the Texans to win it. And they got their first taste of the playoffs with Josh Allen. From that point, it's like, okay, the Bills look like they were game for the moment. So that leads to positivity for the next year. 2020 comes around. It's COVID year. The Bills are excellent in the regular season. They get all the way to the AFC Championship game to play in Kansas City. A huge step forward from what they were the previous year, losing in the wild card round. Kansas City beats them in a game where it's not really that close. But from that point, it's like, okay, they made it all the way to the AFC Championship game. Sky's the limit. They got the experience. Allen is that much further into his development. See what happens. 2021 comes around. Divisional round against the Chiefs. Allen has the playoff, two-week stretch of playoffs of his life. The perfect game against the Patriots and then against the Chiefs. But they were undone in the final seconds of regulation, really robbing them of the opportunity to play in the AFC Championship game. But the takeaway from that, even though they kind of let one slip away, let an opportunity slip away, is that Allen is for real. The offense is for real as long as Josh Allen is the quarterback. Perhaps it's only a matter of time. Then they go into 2022, the Super Bowl betting favorites. Huge expectations. The year, they just had to go through a ton. It's not an excuse, but objectively, they went through a ton. And they were gassed by the end of it. You could tell. They were drained. But even with that exit, a lot of these pieces coming back, a lot of young players, maybe if they get a receiving option or they get themselves a little bit more progressed with those receiving options, maybe it's different. There is still optimism. But this year is different. This year, there still should be some optimism from within the building, from within the fan base, because as long as Josh Allen is in the prime of his career and playing the game the way that he is, which is this multi-purpose quarterback threat that is an absolute rock star on third and fourth downs. As long as he is that version of himself, the Bills will be playoff contenders. But the very core pieces that they have built themselves around over these last 5 years, it's getting right around to be decision time on a lot of these guys. I mean, facts are facts. They are nearly $50 million over the cap in 2024. A lot of their star players that they have depended on are in their 30s. That includes, let me get my full list. That includes Jordan Poyer turning 33 in April. Micah Hyde, 33 years old right now, turned in December. Von Miller turns 35 in March. Mitch Morse turns 32 in April. Leonard Floyd turns 32 in September and is a free agent. Daquan Jones, 32 years old. Shaq Lawson, just a bit player, turns 30 in June. Jordan Phillips, 32 in September. Deion Dawkins, 30 in April. Stephon Diggs, just turned 30 in November. Matt Milano turns 30 in July. This is not the team that was pushing forward and syncing up their build really well, mind you, around the prime of a lot of these players. Many of these players that I just mentioned are either at the end or past the prime of their careers. And they are taking up a lot of cap space. And I didn't even mention Tre'Davious White, who is 29 years old, but is coming off a torn Achilles injury. And there are some genuine wonders about what that's going to look like. So you have cap problems. You have all of these aging stars who were your core, who were your identity outside of Josh Allen, who you depended on week in, week out. These are all players who could see their performances worsen in the coming year. And that's before you even have to start slashing salary just to get cap compliant. So this optimism that has reigned supreme after each one of these playoff losses, I feel like the pessimism as to whether or not this was the best shot that they could have had remaining with this current core has to be in the brain of a lot of people. I know it is for me. You know, obviously I am not a fan, but when I am looking at the roster construction and seeing how they were built to maybe even plateau over these past 2 years, and for them to fall woefully short 2 years in a row with home playoff games, mind you, to me, that signals that something has to change. Something is a little stale. Something needs to go here. And Bean has done a nice job in the past of, you know, reinventing certain positions. But we're talking about the core players of the roster here. Like, think about the guys that I just listed off. Tre'Davious White, Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde, Von Miller, Mitch Morse, Leonard Floyd, who came here this year, Daquan Jones, who's been a staple the last 2 years, Deion Dawkins, Stephon Diggs, Matt Milano. And that's not to say, like, some of these guys won't be back next year. Like, Milano will be back, but he's coming off a significant leg injury. Stephon Diggs, bit of a question mark there. We don't know what's going to happen in the offseason. He's signed to a lot of money. It would cost them a lot of money, or it would be a big dead cap charge to trade him. But still doable if they wanted to just kind of refresh themselves. But White, Poyer, Hyde, Miller, Morse. Morse has a year left on his deal, but with his concussion history, you always have to wonder about retirement when you get into your 30s with players that have had that extensive of a concussion history. No indication that that's going to happen, mind you, but that's at least something that you have to keep in the back of your brain.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
DirecTV gives you access to apps like Netflix and live sports right next to each other.
I don't get it.
Let me put it in pigeon terms. It's like that one amazing dumpster with the old fruits and cardboard all in one place.
How am I supposed to keep up with illustrative metaphors when you are making me so hungry?
Get live TV and streaming apps together without a satellite. Visit DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet-connected Gemini device and separate paid subscription to watch Netflix on DirecTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
And don't get me wrong, this isn't like a total sky is falling, because they still have good pieces. Like, even if Morse were to retire, they still have four of their five offensive linemen coming back next year and under contract. They still have James Cook. They still have Khalil Shakir. They still have Dalton Kincaid. On defense, they still have Ed Oliver. They still have Greg Rousseau. They still have Rasul Douglas, Taron Johnson, Matt Milano, if he comes back to full strength, and Terrell Bernard. Like, these are things to build around. But there is going to be a step back when you combine the amount of money that they are over the cap with perhaps declining ability for the previous core of your roster, when you have to establish a new core of your roster, these building blocks. The days of depending on Jordan Poyer, Tre'Davious White, and Micah Hyde are gone. At least Poyer and Hyde. Like, Micah Hyde might have played his last game as a Bill. We'll see how that goes. He's a free agent. Poyer is on a contract that is very easy to remove. Like, there's not a lot of dead cap there. But all this leads to the bigger point. They cannot put themselves in a spot where they're taking Josh Allen and the prime of Josh Allen's career for granted. He is turning 28 years old in May. And while he could still have a good 6 years in front of him, 6-7 years, is he going to be the same style of quarterback 3 years from now as he is right now? Like, the current version of Josh Allen is a guy that can win you any kind of game. But if he has to begin running less and take that element of the Bills' offensive structure away, then it's not quite the same. It's not the prime of his career. So they just have to be extremely intentional this offseason with all of these very difficult decisions. Who to move on from? Who to try and re-sign? Who to try and trade? There are a lot of things that they need to make difficult decisions that need to be emotionless. You can look back fondly on the first 7 years of this build, but it's got to be a little different moving forward. Wasting a year of Allen's prime because they just stick with what they have, it's not the way to go, not to me. And we'll get into plenty of these off-season decisions as the off-season goes. But this is just a big picture thing. Something has to change. As currently constructed, very clearly not good enough. Something is not working. The first step is figuring out what personnel changes that they can make on the roster. Maybe it's more skill position players. Maybe it's retooling the defense with younger players that fit your mold. And hoping to hit some home runs like you did with Poyer and Hyde. But there has to be something different. Maybe 2024 is a minor step back because Allen accounts for $47 million on the cap next year. And you're going to have a lot of players who command a lot of your cap space that could potentially fall off the books after 2024. So that could be a way to think about it, where it's maybe a minor step back, still be in the playoff consideration, but maybe not the outright Super Bowl contenders that you were, whereas you're kind of spinning it forward, establishing the new core, the core building blocks, I should say, and then looking at 2025 as the year you punch back up in a big way. It's going to have to be these, especially now with all of these players getting pretty up there in age, there's going to be maybe a micro rebuild, a rebuild on the fly. Rebuild might not even be the word. But just like a micro retooling to, like I said, take a minor step back to take a big step forward in 2025. But the big picture is they will always have playoff considerations, be a playoff contender, as long as Josh Allen is playing the way that he is. But they also have to be damn careful not to waste it. And that's the position that they find themselves in. Because he is now 28. He's drafted in 2018, so that's 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23. 6 years already. He's now going into his seventh season. You almost feel like it's got to happen within the next 3 to 4 years before his game has to shift from what he is right now. It might even be fewer than that, but that's what it looks like, at least right now. Naturally, as quarterbacks get older, they have to stop putting their bodies at risk the way that Allen does less, because you're more likely to get injured and things of that nature. But finding a way to refresh this roster, keep it competitive, and then maybe take the big step a couple years from now might be the way to go. Regardless, something needs to change. Some sort of retooling needs to happen. They cannot be the same structure of roster year in and year out. And everything that they have been working for, getting to the Super Bowl, winning the Super Bowl, finally bringing a world championship to Buffalo with one of the best quarterbacks in the league, it all depends on it. So we are in for a buckle your seatbelts type of offseason, I think. Could see a lot of changes. Maybe not all of the names that I listed, but all of the names that I listed at least have some sort of question. And not to mention, basically, their entire defensive line outside of Ed Oliver, Von Miller, and Greg Rousseau, and Kingsley Jonathan are out of contract heading into next year. There are going to be some legitimate changes to this Bills team for 2024. And every single decision Brandon Bean makes from here on out will determine whether or not it's a short-term crack at it or maybe taking a micro step back for another 2 to 3 year window past it to eventually become Super Bowl champions. Either way, we are in for quite an offseason. So that's where I'm going to leave you. I'm not going to do player awards. I don't think you want to hear about player awards tonight. This is about what went wrong and what needs to change moving forward for this team to finally get to where they have been pining to go since Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean showed up in 2017. All right. It's 3 a.m. That's going to do it for me. The last one here at Highmark Stadium, looking around at it. It's been a fun year. It's been a different year, but one that is inherently memorable and could be the catalyst of good things to come for the Bills, or could be the first step of a demise in 2024. We shall see. So, thanks everyone for listening. Thanks everyone for following along all season long. Thanks everyone for reading, subscribing, everything that you do. I really appreciate it. I love this job. I don't take it for granted. And being able to sit here at between the hours of 2 and 3 a.m. in a stadium, as the lights are still on, being able to talk about a game with you all is just awesome. So, humbly, thank you. But we are not anywhere close to a parting of the ways here, because now we kick into off-season mode. And I don't know if you know this about me, I kind of love the off-season. Big fan. So we'll get into a lot of it as we move forward. But First step, locker room cleanout on Monday. Then we'll hear from Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean later in the week. Then figure out what the heck to do with this roster. All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening. My name is Joe Biscalli. This has been the Buffalo Beat Podcast, and we will talk to you next week. See you then.